Hi, thank you for tuning in to this week's edition of Natural Health. I'm Ann Mihalik, your volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. For today's program, I have selected two articles from the weekly newspaper, The Epoch Times, specifically the Mind and Body section, the issue dated February 2nd to the 8th, 2022. The first article is entitled, Healthy Breathing Makes You Brainier, and the second article is, Would You Try Biological Dentistry? So let's jump right in with the first article entitled, Healthy Breathing Makes You Brainier, How Everyday Breathing Affects Your Ability to Concentrate and What to Do About It, by Patrick McKeown. There's no denying that the past 2 years have presented challenges. At work and in family life, we've all dealt with unprecedented situations. The COVID-19 pandemic has created an urgent need to address mental health issues due to a global increase in anxiety and depressive disorders. While mental well-being is a multifaceted issue, research out of Harvard shows us a simple truth. A wandering mind is an unhappy mind. In 2010, Daniel Gilbert and Matthew Killingsworth collected real-time data from an app known as Track Your Happiness. They concluded that the ability to think about what is not happening is a cognitive achievement that comes at an emotional cost. For many of us, the start of a new year is an opportunity to refocus on goals, work, and the quality of our lives. But what does the word focus mean to you? At its core, focus is the ability to be in the present, concentrating on what's happening now, to give attention to something for a sustained period, whether that's the task at hand or an overarching dream or ideal. Focus is the result of hundreds of days of habit building, years of determination, and clarity of vision. On a purely practical level, focus requires concentration. From school through university and in the workplace, military, professional sports, and the arts, success and fulfillment depend on our ability to concentrate without distraction, to absorb and retain information, to stay alert. How many mistakes have we made during our day-to-day lives simply because we weren't paying attention? The frustrating thing is that this lack of attention isn't deliberate. Most people generally show up wanting to do their best, but we've gone through life with little to no guidance on how to concentrate. A good education may rely on mental focus, but it doesn't teach you how to achieve it. Modern life presents more distractions than we had to face even a generation ago. If we aren't careful, today's youngsters and those of us who aren't so young can spend hours scrolling aimlessly on their phones, increasing mind activity and reducing the ability to hold attention. And then there's the problem of breathing. From a scientific perspective, if your breathing patterns are dysfunctional, your concentration will suffer. There are good reasons why contemplative traditions such as yoga equate steadiness of breath with a stillness of the mind. Breathing affects blood flow and oxygen delivery to the brain. It directly affects the balance of your nervous system, activating or moderating stress response. When your body is in a heightened state of stress, brain cells die, and as more primal survival mechanisms take over, your intelligence literally switches off. When your physiology is out of whack, it's hard to turn things around using mindset, positive thinking, and raw effort. It's therefore vital to approach focus from the bottom up. Begin with deep sleep, functional breathing, and becoming aware of your breath, body, and mind in that order. Then you'll have a clear path toward your goals. I like to illustrate this with a revised hierarchy of needs. Get a good night's sleep first, and the rest will follow. Heading: How to sleep well. To achieve deep sleep, breathing must be slow, light, from the diaphragm, and through the nose. Sleep hygiene is important, but the elephant in the room is mouth breathing. When you breathe through an open mouth during sleep, areas of the brain that signal arousal are activated. You're more likely to snore loudly or experience obstructive sleep apnea, OSA, and to be in a chronic state of stress. In the same way that fatigue causes thousands of road traffic accidents every year, it affects your ability to focus at work. In children, poor sleep contributes to behavioral problems. The very fact that sleep apnea is considered a risk factor for dementia indicates the effect it can have on the health of your brain. Dr. Christian Guillemot, who was a leading researcher in the field of sleep medicine, said, "Elimination of oral breathing, that is, restoration of nasal breathing during wake and sleep, may be the only valid endpoint when treating OSA." Heading, breathing to flow. The ultimate form of concentration is something called flow. Flow is the state in which you bring your full attention to a task and complete it with your utmost capability, often effortlessly. The right action happens by itself and time flies. In performance, it's the culmination of years of patient practice and the ability to get out of the way, to step back from the conscious mind and its hows and trust the work. In the words of Formula One racing driver Michael Schumacher, you have to become one with the car. In flow, the mind is relaxed and alert at the same time. It's not the same as zoning out, and despite the common instruction to follow your bliss, it doesn't require that you feel some divine calling to whatever work you're doing. But it does demand the ability to immerse yourself in a task, and for that, you need to be able to concentrate. If you have some experience being in flow, think back. Did you ever manage to get reliably into flow when you were exhausted or feeling unwell? If you were in a state of fight or flight, could you achieve flow? Physiologically, there are reasons why stage fright may have knocked you off your game. Why you couldn't get past the negative self-talk and into a flow state during that important presentation, despite hours of preparation. Heading, the biochemistry of breath. As I discussed in my book, The Breathing Cure, studies involving music students have found that those who experience the worst performance nerves hyperventilate and breathe irregularly before a performance. Cold hands, shaking, and a sense of disassociation are all symptoms of low blood carbon dioxide caused by overbreathing. Hyperventilation is breathing that's fast, hard, and into the upper chest. It involves taking in too much air, and it trips your body into stress. This is why the instruction to take a deep breath to calm the nerves can be counterproductive. Nasal, light breathing, on the other hand, stimulates the vagus nerve, a long cranial nerve that activates the parasympathetic nervous system, the body's rest and digest mode. When breathing is slow, during longer exhalations, the vagus nerve releases a neurotransmitter that slows the heart. Light breathing increases levels of carbon dioxide in the blood. Carbon dioxide opens blood vessels in the brain, improving circulation to your thinking machinery. It's also instrumental in the release of oxygen to organs and tissues, including your brain. The brain needs oxygen to think. Remember, when breathing is harder and faster, the brain interprets that the body is in danger. No matter what ambitions you have for your mental acuity, when the body is under stress, the brain will prioritize survival, undermining executive functions such as planning and decision making. It's why our good judgment goes out the window when we're stressed. Heading, breathing better decisions. Scientists have proven that slow breathing can help us make better decisions. In one study, 56 students were randomly assigned either a 2-minute breathing exercise involving a slow inhalation and an extended exhalation, or to watch an emotionally neutral film. They were then asked to perform a challenging 30-minute decision-making task with multiple-choice answers. While the control group who had watched the film reported heightened stress, the breathing group had no uptick in stress. The people who completed the slow breathing task had 50% more correct answers than their counterparts as well, a significant improvement in decision-making ability. Heading, the nose knows. I often get questions about slow breathing. Students are confused that when they slow their breath, their lungs never seem full. This is correct. The key to slow breathing isn't to disproportionately increase the volume of air. big breaths, even perform slowly, sacrifice your blood biochemistry, and blow off too much vital carbon dioxide. Aim to keep your breathing slow, light, from the diaphragm and through your nose. Finally, a word for those who can't breathe through their nose. A blocked nose can feel like a real obstacle for many people, but this simple exercise will help, unless you have a severe physical obstruction, in which case you might consider surgery. You should be able to breathe through your nose. In my experience, if you can breathe through your nose for 1 minute, you can do so for life. I've taught many people who were scheduled for nasal surgery to breathe through their nose without going under the knife. This nose unblocking exercise was my own first introduction to breathing exercises in 1997. Try it. It works in as little as 5 minutes by increasing carbon dioxide in the blood and opening the nasal passages. Heading: How to Unblock Your Nose. Here are 6 steps to unblock your nose. Sit upright on a straight-backed chair. Allow your breathing to calm. Take a small breath, 2 seconds, in through your nose if you can, and a small breath out, 3 seconds. If you're unable to breathe in through your nose, take a tiny sip of air in through the corner of your mouth. Now, pinch your nose to hold your breath. Keep your mouth closed. Gently begin to nod your head or sway your body from side to side. Continue nodding or swaying until you feel that you can't hold your breath any longer. Maintain the breath hold until you feel a relatively strong need for air. Don't push it until you're gasping, or your next breath in will be too hard and fast. When you need to breathe in, let go of your nose and breathe gently through it. Breathe in and out with your mouth closed. When you first inhale, avoid taking a deep breath. Instead, calm your breathing as soon as possible by refocusing on relaxation. Repeat to yourself, relax and breathe less. Repeat this exercise until you can breathe fully through your nose. If your nose doesn't become completely unblocked, wait for about a minute and perform the exercise again. At first, you may need to repeat the steps several times to clear your nose. Once you have tried the exercise a few times, your nose will be unblocked. But if you continue to overbreathe, you'll lose the additional carbon dioxide and it will congest again. It's normal for the nose to block again until the underlying breathing starts to change. Each time your nose blocks, perform the exercise again. Even if you have a cold, this exercise is very effective. Over time and with regular practice of breathing exercises, your body will adapt to higher levels of carbon dioxide in your blood, and your nose will remain clear. Heading: How to Improve Your Focus. If you feel like life is pulling you down, or if your lack of focus is affecting work performance and family life, begin paying attention to your breathing throughout the day. If your breathing is getting a little faster, bring attention to your breath and slow down the exhalation. Even 90 seconds of a slow and relaxed exhalation can help activate a relaxation response. You'll find a much more detailed explanation of the connection between breathing and focus in my book, Atomic Focus. You'll also find many exercises to train your brain to concentrate and boost your intuition and confidence. And remember, breathe light, slow, low, and through your nose. Your brain will thank you. The author Patrick McKeown is an internationally renowned breathing coach, author, and speaker. He's the creator of Oxygen Advantage, founder of Bateco Clinic International, and a fellow of the Royal Society of Biology in the UK. His published works include research in the Journal of Clinical Medicine and books including The Oxygen Advantage, The Breathing Cure, and Atomic Focus. You are listening to Natural Health on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Ann Mihalik, your volunteer reader, and the second article I've selected for today's program is entitled, Would You Try Biological Dentistry? This holistic practice of dentistry offers a unique approach to oral health, by Jennifer Margulis. Unlike most of us, Mandara Cromwell loves going to the dentist. Though she lives in Augusta, Georgia, Cromwell drives 2 hours each way to see her dentist in Greenville, South Carolina. In today's dentistry, we're doing it wrong, said Cromwell, who has been engaged in health-related work for more than 45 years. We really need to take a different approach. Cromwell, the founder of Cyma Technologies, a company that manufactures stress and pain-relieving devices, said the right approach is called biological dentistry. If you're not in a holistic health field, you may not have heard the phrase biological dentistry. Biological dentists believe that problems in the mouth are connected to a person's overall wellness. These natural-minded dentists don't just want to fix your teeth. Instead, biological dentists also try to help their patients optimize their health and well-being by treating the root causes of their oral symptoms. Biological dentists argue that dental problems, from swollen gums to cavities, are best treated by looking at the whole person and using comprehensive holistic therapies. In Ayurvedic and Chinese medicine, the teeth are connected to all the major organ systems, Cromwell told me. When we do something natural and non-invasive to relax the body, focus on a healthy oral biome, and allow the release of toxic buildup, then the body has the ability to regenerate and take care of itself. That's the premise of biological dentistry. According to Cromwell, when the oral biome is out of balance, harmful bacteria and other microorganisms can start to dominate. Eating highly processed foods, having high levels of stress, cortisol levels disturb the pH of the mouth, and other lifestyle factors encourage the overgrowth of unhealthy mouth bacteria, she said. Heading, what are your mouth problems trying to tell you? Oral health issues such as bacterial overgrowth or a yeasty white coating on the tongue are often connected to and perhaps even causing other health conditions. These health problems include heart disease, autoimmune conditions, and even cancer. Several studies have found that people with poor oral hygiene who suffer from gum disease or tooth loss are often at higher risk for cardiovascular problems and strokes than people who have good oral hygiene. As early as 1996, scientists from Harvard School of Dental Medicine found that men with fewer teeth were at greater risk of heart disorders. Since then, as a team of Australian researchers explained in a 2017 study published in PLOS One, there is increasing evidence linking periodontal disease with cardiovascular disease and its adverse outcomes. A 2019 review and analysis of 10 articles by Lithuanian researchers found a link between gum disease and rheumatoid arthritis. And in 2020, a team of researchers from Sichuan University in China found that certain characteristics of a person's oral microbiome, that is, the makeup of the bacteria in the mouth, were linked to pancreatic cancer. According to this study, published in the World Journal of Gastroenterology, when individuals had streptococcus and leptotrichia in their mouths, it was an indication of pancreatic adenocarcinoma. At the same time, individuals who had other strains of bacteria in their mouths seemed to be protected against cancer. According to Robert H. Schmerling, a medical doctor and senior editor at Harvard Health Publishing, although many studies have shown a link between different health conditions and oral health, researchers aren't sure if the harmful bacteria in the mouth are causing damage to other parts of the body, or if the bacteria in the mouth are an indication of a generally weakened immune system, or if there are other reasons for the correlation, smoking, for instance. Though the question about cause and effect is still open, the paradigm of biological dentistry is to solve health problems related to the mouth and also resolve the patient's underlying health issues. Heading, conventional dentistry dangerous. Dr. Griffin Cole, who has been practicing biological dentistry in Austin, Texas for more than 20 years, argues that traditional mainstream dentistry may actually be dangerous. At a health conference in Allen, Texas in November 2021, Cole said nearly 50% of American dentists are still filling cavities with mercury amalgams, despite the well-known and well-documented dangers of mercury to human health. Cole also pointed out that mainstream dentists mistakenly encourage their clients to use fluoride, which Cole said isn't needed for any reason and shouldn't be in the water. A key aspect to biological dentistry, according to Cole, is undoing problems that may have been caused by mainstream dentistry. Cole encouraged the audience to learn about safe mercury removal and also educate themselves about no-drill cavity techniques and other techniques to preserve as much of the original tooth as possible when filling cavities. He argued that the best dentists are the ones who take their time with each patient, instead of seeing 20 to 25 patients per day, which, according to Cole, is the average for mainstream dentists. Heading: Safe Mercury Removal. Central Dentist, a practice based in Dallas, Texas, that specializes in holistic dentistry and functional oral health, was another biological dentistry practice at the conference. The Central Dentist Way, according to a handout offered to participants, includes the safe removal of mercury amalgams. Individual responses to mercury vary, but researchers have implicated exposure to mercury to a variety of very troubling health problems, including Alzheimer's disease, kidney disease, and even depression. For this reason, the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology created a set of recommendations for the safe removal of mercury amalgams called SMART. This technique includes preparing the body for the mercury removal, implementing protective protocols for the patient and the dental team, and using replacement materials for the fillings that are non-toxic to the individual patient. Heading: Avoiding Fluoride. Biological dentists don't advocate the use of fluoride, whether in toothpaste, tooth powders, or drinking water. While conventional dentists argue that fluoride helps strengthen and protect the teeth, biological dentists point out that fluoride is a known neurotoxin and that children who are exposed to fluoride at higher levels score lower on IQ tests than children who are exposed at lower levels. A 2012 systematic review published in the journal Environmental Health Perspectives, conducted by scientists from Harvard's School of Public Health and China's Medical University in Shenyang, analyzed 27 studies and found a strong indication that fluoride negatively affects children's cognitive development. A 2019 study combed 14 subsequent studies and found similar results. Dr. Felipe Grandjean, the study's author, is a Danish-born environmental epidemiologist at Harvard University whose work focuses on the lifelong impacts of early exposure to toxic chemicals. Grandjean concluded that early life exposure to fluoride was negatively associated with children's brain abilities, and that safe exposures are likely to be below currently accepted or recommended fluoride concentrations in the water. Heading: Using Ozone. Ozone is a reactive man-made compound that consists of three oxygen atoms. Its chemical formula is O3. Ozone is commonly considered harmful because in its gaseous form, it can be irritating or even poisonous to breathe. Even small amounts of ozone can lead to chest pain, shortness of breath, throat irritation, and coughing, according to the Environmental Protection Agency. To use ozone safely, dentists ensure it isn't inhaled. It is applied topically to the teeth with suction used to keep it from entering the lungs. In this manner, dental patients can get the benefits of ozone without the potential consequences. Biological dentists advocate for the use of ozone to fight infection, speed up healing, and help with sterilizing fillings and crowns. When used in biological dentistry, Cole said, ozone can be effective in fighting bacterial and fungal infections, as well as mouth sores and herpes. Biological dentists argue that ozone is a safe and effective treatment for preventing tooth decay and a host of other oral health problems. If you want personalized dental care that looks at the problems you're having in your mouth as part of your overall health, holistic, that is, biological dentistry may be right for you. As with other individualized health modalities in the United States, however, the barrier to seeing these kinds of dentists is often the cost. But Jean Rorda, 44, who lives in Candler, North Carolina, says biological dentistry is worth it. Rorta's family has always avoided conventional dentists, she says. The mother of three sons, ages 24, 12, and 7, Rorta insists that seeing a biological dentist will ultimately save you money. They address the cause of the problem, so less intervention is necessary, she said. Prevention might be more expensive up front, but it's so much more rewarding. It always costs more money in the long run if you need more fillings and more crowns and more root canals and all of that. And if you go to a biological dentist, you get to keep your teeth, Rorta laughed. What's better than that? The author, Jennifer Margulis, PhD, is an award-winning science journalist, book author, and sought-after speaker, a frequent contributor to the Epoch Times. And it's time now for the answer to last week's trivia question, which was, what was the first state? And the answer is Delaware. Next week's question, Ludwig van Beethoven was born in 1770 in which city? And that is all the time we have for today's edition of Natural Health. Remember, if you missed any part of this program, or if you would like to listen to it again, you can access it on demand at sunsounds.org. Then click Broadcast Info and Audio, then On Demand Podcasts, and then select Natural Health under the Health category. And be sure to take a listen to other programs that you might also be interested in. Thank you for tuning in. I am Ann Mihalik, your volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Be sure to stay tuned for more great programming. Bye for now.